and townships, and just trying to get an opportunity to, one, meet everyone, and two, see what are priorities of you, of yours, and how we can be helpful at the federal level. And then, I mean, so I was sworn in on January 3rd, and things, we've opened both of our offices here in Orlando, and D.C. is firing on all cylinders. The Orlando office is on Robinson across from Lake Eola, and then we have a second office in Sanford. And with me today, with me today is Lauren Allen, who is my district director, and then I have Rob, who is my communications person from D.C.
Hello. Let's introduce ourselves.
Yeah,
Commissioner, we'll start with you.
I'm sorry. Commissioner Greg Seidel, C1 in the park.
Carolyn Cooper, C3.
I'm Randy Knight, City Manager.
Cindy Vaughn, City Clerk. Sarah Sprinkle, C2.
Vice Mayor.
Yeah. Too many things this morning, sorry.
Just gave an incredible presentation for the new
Wellness
Center.
Yes, she did.
Oh, great.
Yep.
Yes, unveiling today.
Is it going up in the same spot that it was?
Except we're fixing all that mess of roads, so it's really wonderful. Big partnership.
Wonderful.
I'm Pete Weldon. I'm C4 Commissioner.
Mm-hmm. And the mayor, of course, is in New Orleans on business, so he wasn't able to be here today.
And the fact that we have seats means nothing. We're all elected at large, so we don't have districts or anything like that.
Okay.
It just keeps them from fighting where they sit at the dais.
That's right.
And you have alternating years that you're up for.
Right.
Yeah, it seems like someone's up every year. What is it?
Yeah, every year.
It's
two. Right, everybody.
It's two 1 year, two the second year, and the mayor the third year by himself.
Right.
Yeah, I told Sarah I wanted to run for her seat, so I didn't have to vote first all the time, but I have to vote first all the time.
So this time around, the election March 14th, Greg's seat and my seat are up.
Yes. And Sarah's unopposed, thank goodness.
So I'm already done. Oh, thank you. That's nice.
Well,
you
had some serious stuff
really
going on.
I would be having a hard time if I was trying to do anything. My husband's had serious surgery, so that's
that would be too much. Yeah, and that hour.
Yeah, we met a couple weeks ago when Stephanie had former Speaker Pelosi and Senator Nancy at the market over on Corinne Drive, and I represent Winter Park in Washington. We had brief minute or two to chat, and have you done any of these before with other cities yet?
I've met with the economic development person. I've met with individuals, but I haven't done this format before with any of the other cities.
I think we're probably, like most of the cities, we're looking hard at infrastructure issues primarily, because there's never enough money for infrastructure improvements and traffic, because of Central Florida continues to just get worse and worse, and so there's SunRail, and there's a multitude of infrastructure issues, and that's kind of where I think where this will probably lead you. At least my impression of this meeting will be focusing primarily on infrastructure. So with that, I shall.
And on a more global regional level, I think we need to protect municipal bonds, the non-taxable aspect of that, because we have like $1.7 million over the last 10 years invested in infrastructure by municipalities, and we really need to protect that. So at every opportunity, we would appreciate that. It's going to be a big thing for you, I think.
And you know, to elaborate on that a little bit, every time there's any tax reform proposed, one of the things they go after is tax-exempt bonds, thinking, well, that's just a tax break for the rich. But what it really is a tax break for everybody, because it allows us to do our infrastructure projects at lower interest rates. So, you know, it is the taxpayers that are paying back that debt. And so it's not just a tax break for those people that buy the bonds. It's a tax break for everybody who's repaying those bonds through the municipal taxes and water rates, electric rates, that type of thing. So just be careful. You know, all the rhetoric that goes on up there sometimes,
right,
you're going to hear that this is just some tax loophole, but it really does help every community across the country finance their projects at a lower cost. And so that's why it's important to us.
And what else? FEMA. Certainly,
yeah,
the clawback provisions.
There's always FEMA because of where we are. I mean, in 2004, we had the three hurricanes, and it took, what, Randy, I think it was 10 years?
It took 10 years to get reimbursed, and now we're in that five-year window of them being able to come back and audit us. You keep in mind they audit it before you submit the paperwork. They audit it when you submit the paperwork, and then they've got 5 years after they paid you to come back and audit it again. So, you know, it's a...
We're trying to get a three-year limit on that.
Right.
So that we're not talking about... Right now, they're auditing the 2004 storms.
Right.
And they started that in 2011, mm-hmm. and they're coming back to municipalities and saying, oh, that was a mistake, we'd like to have that money back. You know, so just across the region, mm-hmm. you're going to hear that if you can get that amendment that we... limit their opportunity to come back and take our money back, because we've already spent it on the infrastructure projects to fix the things that were damaged. And that's not just Winter Park, that's all cities in the Central Florida area. But we would like a limit on their ability to come back and say, oh no, we don't agree with our decision that was made 11 years ago. Mm-hmm. If we can get a three-year, that seems reasonable for everyone. And I gave Lauren some notes on all these. Thank you. What else for us? Oh, intelligence.
From a regional standpoint, I'm sure you heard a lot of talk about the intelligent transportation systems, being able to use technology to improve traffic versus just adding more lanes to the roads, and so, you know, any opportunity to bring funds back to this region to help 1792 and 50 and, you know, all the state and federal roads through here. You know.
A lot of that funding comes out of Washington, but it goes to
through
the state Department of Transportation.
Yes, we just finished having a conversation with somebody who spent the last three decades with the Florida Department of Transportation.
Oh, I would love to know what you learned.
Yes. Well, much of that is in the state's hands.
So I know the gas formula was modified.
Not changed since 1993.
Well, we're getting more back now, I think.
You mean the tax or the what formula?
Oh, the money that comes back to Florida.
Yeah, we've been a donor state.
We're still a donor state, but we're getting substantially more than we were getting back. Yeah, they haven't changed the gas. I don't know what they're going to do. That's going to be something that you guys have to deal with, and it's... you know, the Highway Trust Fund is essentially bankrupt, and people are driving more miles per gallon if they're driving in a car that uses fuel, and if not, they're not paying anything because the electric vehicles aren't taxed. So
it's going to get worse.
It's a tough situation, and somebody somewhere is going to have to bite the bullet and face the facts. But where we're sitting, obviously, we're looking at a lot of situations, 1792, 426, those are state highways, and there's really no money to buy right away, so the improvements are all going to come through intelligent transportation system modifications and so forth. So anything that can be done to solve some of those problems using smart technology, I think is really where we are. Now, Greg has sort of taken a leadership role with the city commission on that, and
we've updated our comp plan, and as part of that we have our mobility plan. And so as part of the mobility plan, the one interesting thing we did in our comp plan is we adopted the fact that all the roads are constrained and we're not going to look to widen the roads. We're not going to add lanes to 1792. We don't want to add lanes. What we want to do is make our traffic more efficient. And so part of the mobility plan, but I've spoken with Dory and I've spoken with our consultant, is kind of develop, the first thing I want to do is develop a scope to kind of look how we can start implementing some of these smart transportation features into our city planning. And then as part of the mobility plan, look at the, you know, intersection improvements, and intersection capacity is going to be our greatest thing we can do. And then how we tie those intersection improvements together and the timing of the signals and the things through town, and how we control those is really kind of where we need to get to. And then at some point it becomes some of these projects will be on local streets and some will be on state streets. And so it's once we have those identified, it's how do we get the funding in place. And you're saying the federal funding comes through the state, and then the state distributes the federal funding. That's kind of what I just heard. Right? And so it's really, so we need to, at the state level, making sure we have the contacts that people understand these things are coming. And I do know with, you know, what I tell people with, you know, Rick Scott and Anant at the DOT, they made the DOT very locally based. If the locals want things done, they're going to try and make those things happen. And so for me, that's what I've been trying to get the message out, that if we can go to them with the projects and they will look to match funds and do joint projects, that, you know, that's the tactic I'm trying to get us to take and to move forward on so that we can start addressing these things. The other part of that is the SunRail that I point out, is that, you know, the SunRail right now doesn't go through town that often. It's going to start to go through town more when it gets connected to the other areas and when they start running the SunRail more often. And so that's another issue we've got to deal with, is more trains coming through town and affecting our traffic. And so just to start planning for that stuff. So,
well, I'm glad you're focused on it. It sounds like you've got your arms around how that funding works. And so
I try to
it's earmark,
but I don't have the contacts at certain and state levels,
and that helps a lot.
Right, I have the I know the people that do the work. I don't know the people that program the work specifically, and you know where those decisions are made, and that's where, you know, Jim would be helpful and things like that.
And I believe there was some project, and Jim, you might be able to provide some more details on this. There was a project in the works involving smart signalization trials, if you will, or perhaps it was more of a basic research, applied research, that was going to be in our area, and we don't know where that stands today, do we?
Well, there were actually a couple of projects. I think the one you're referring to is the one that involves taking the pings off cell towers.
Yeah.
As they travel down the road, they can take the number of pings and then translate those pings into highway traffic, and then you convert the signals at the peak times where the traffic can flow more fluidly. That's one of them. The other was we were trying to put a I went up to town or to District 5 and tried to get some interest in doing a project for Winter Park, and they promptly told me they weren't interested in a Winter Park project, that I needed to put together a regional coalition.
Sure.
Whereupon we assembled a coalition of Seminole County, Orlando, Winter Park. For some reason, I couldn't get Maitland to engage. They're just out there building apartments, I guess. I don't know. But there's that element of it. But both of those are geared around intelligent transportation system networks and taking the technologies that exist and using those to push the throughput to a higher level. So, but it all involves funding, and when we're up chasing money in Washington, that's got to go to Tallahassee, and then we've got to get somebody in Tallahassee to reprogram that funding down here. Everything that can be done from a, I hate to use the words, influence peddling standpoint, but that's really what it is. The more influence we can wield, the better we're going to do. And it's not just Winter Park. We're talking regionally, so we're not being that parochial, even though I know you live here. Everybody along those corridors will benefit. So, and I don't think there's anybody else, to my knowledge, that's out there thinking forward. I know Maitland's not. I know Bob Dillard from Seminole County would like to, but he's got Longwood, Castleberry, Lake Mary, and Sandy.
We met with him as well, so I'm aware of his
priorities. So I guess, yeah. So, and Bob's a good guy. Mm-hmm. And
he is thinking regionally.
Bob is definitely thinking regionally. I think he's had a metro plan, though, isn't he? Mm-hmm. So we've got all that, and we've got a lot of infrastructure things, the airport. My biggest fear is that we wind up with this intermodal center at the airport with no trains to go into it because all of Port Florida's stuck. There's no movement with SunRail. The private group that's trying to push a light rail, they're stuck.
Yeah, now there's capacity along 528 at the project I worked on, so that if something was going to the port, so you could get from the ports to the airport.
Well, there's capacity there, but where's the train?
Yeah.
There's not appetite for
right.
It. There's capacity for it, but not appetite for it.
Yeah. All aboard Florida is stuck in Palm Beach.
And I would say that is that's negative appetite in Palm Beach.
So.
We just think it's great that you're coming to a nice town hall meeting after yesterday by all these other people. According to the news last night. So.
Well, you're welcome here and appreciate it, and we need your influence. We need your influence. I wish the mayor was here, and he unfortunately couldn't be here, mm-hmm. but he had mentioned something about the transportation. Steve Leary.
Oh.
He had mentioned back when we talked about the transportation funding for smart signalization that one of the committees, the transportation committee in D.C., did have some influence over the criteria. And those kinds of ways that you can help us would be very much appreciated.
So in the post-earmark era, the criteria is an area that what the Congress can set, and one in which we'd be happy to work with you.
Perfect.
If you'll provide additional information about the kinds of criteria you're looking for.
Okay.
I'll tell you what we have done in the transportation space, transportation and infrastructure space, is that in the recent letter submission to the White House on the state's transportation and infrastructure priorities, Florida was the only one that did not submit the state priorities. And so what our office has done is we're working in coordination with, we're the only one of the 49 others submitted, we did not.
That's
so
right.
Our office is working to collect the Central Florida specific priorities so that we're putting it in a letter, working with Representative Demings and Soto to submit it on behalf of Central Florida to the White House directly.
Thank you.
So though it isn't submitted with the rest of the states, we want to make sure that however they're using that information, that Central Florida has a voice.
Perfect. And have we given you anything you need from us in that regard?
We have been working with it. Lauren can tell you.
We reached out to each city and county and have been in coordination to make a list, and we're still taking on more projects to the list if there's anything that had been left off.
And so I think certainly the intelligent signalization is big for us.
Mm-hmm.
So have you already received something from us? Because if you haven't, we can take care
so
of that.
Can we okay. Check just to
All
be right. sure.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Included.
I have a question. I hear some of the talk from the Republican side regarding earmarks. What are you hearing on the Democratic side? Are you hearing that there's a move to bring those back?
So if I can be frank, earmarks have been given, there's a negative public response to the concept of earmarks. However, if you think about Congress's role, which is the power of the purse, earmarks, so long as they weren't for Bridges to Nowhere, where they were being abused, earmarks was a way to exercise the power of the purse. In the elimination of the earmarks, what Congress is discovering is that they have ceded the power of the purse to the executive branch. And so when you say, I need something specific in one specific place, that in a prior time would be something that Congress would be able to work together on to make happen. In the absence of earmarks, where you can no longer say this money is for this stretch of road somewhere, that's a more difficult prospect.
How does the executive branch get the power to spend the money if you don't authorize it?
You authorize it, but you cannot specify a specific part of a road. You can't earmark the money. You bucket it
for
them.
But you said that the executive branch now has that power. You said that they
right.
turned it.
Well, we authorize a certain amount of funding to the Department of Transportation,
right.
and within the Department of Transportation, they allocate that money to the states. You can no longer say, here's a piece of money, and this money has to go to Winter Park, Florida.
Is that an argument for block grants, or is it an argument for
The question for was about earmarks.
Right.
Yeah, so... earmarks is, and what I've said is that earmarks publicly is not palatable because of the abuses of earmarks in the past. However, under this system where we have eliminated the ability to use earmarks, these are the limitations that Congress has imposed upon itself.
So you're saying that the Department of Transportation, as an example, will, upon its own authority, earmark money that was allocated to the state of Florida by
Congress.
Ultimately, someone makes the decision.
They will allocate it to the state, and the state determines it. Right. But it's no longer, the power is no longer at Congress to earmark this money down into the state.
That I understand.
So you guys would all like to have it back. So if we could call it something different.
It's at the state. So the Florida Department of Transportation gets its bucket of money, and then it decides.
That's the way I thought it worked. When you said that,
that is how it works.
Okay, good.
But generally, that bucket of money comes very broad brush.
Yeah.
And the actual priorities are determined by somebody somewhere. Right. Whether they have our best interest at heart or not is another question.
Well, it's going to be at the state level without the earmarks.
Yes.
Correct. And earmarks, if they're fully vetted and for a explicit public purpose, I don't think are, and this is my opinion, they're not bad. I think, you know, when you had the John Murtha putting a runway in so you wouldn't have to travel somewhere exotic to fly to Washington, that
sure, gives it a bad name.
Mm-hmm. But if it's done with a public purpose and fully vetted, there's nobody that can better determine where that money gets spent than the district congressperson who is having meetings among their constituents like this.
I couldn't agree with you more. I'm just pointing out to you the political realities,
the realities
of trying to bring back something like an earmark.
I'm not fighting either direction, but it's also true that we have representatives in districts in the state of Florida in Tallahassee. So I don't know what the right answer is there, but
I'm
suggesting that it's not obviously to me, it's not an obvious case where the federal level Congress should be allocating specific project dollars. That's just,
Well, they don't right now.
Really? That's right. So what if we talk about the things that you are passionate about?
Well, I'm passionate about this community and about Central Florida and doing what we can from the federal perspective to encourage continued growth and support the innovative economy that we see here in Central Florida. I look at this role broadly in the sense that people may live in 7 and work in 10 or live in 10 and work in 7. And so I don't think people necessarily worry too much about the district, and neither do I. I think of myself as one of the representatives from Central Florida, and whatever we can do to support and cultivate the innovative economy here so that we can create better jobs and more opportunities and a better place for us all to live is what we're looking to do. And I'll tell you, I am assigned to House Armed Services Committee on the Emerging Threats and Capabilities Subcommittee. That subcommittee focuses on cyber and special operations, or it will focus on cyber and special operations this cycle, which obviously has a direct connect to our next the hub that we have over at UCF at the MS&T, Modeling, Simulation, and Technology. The other piece that I have within, I'm sitting on the subcommittee for readiness, and readiness has probably the largest, broadest authority as far as dollars and cents, because it's about how ready is the warfighter. And within that also is included bases and training, all of those things. I am on the Small Business Committee and am the ranking member, one of the few freshmen who has a ranking membership, a ranking member of federal contracts and workforce. Again, another position that, and I also sit on the subcommittee for capital access and taxes for the small business. So these are all positions in which I think really well align with what is going on here in Central Florida. We define, and it depends on whether you look at the IRS definition, but small business is pretty the bulk
business
of what
pretty
we
big
have
business,
here
yeah.
In Central Florida. And so we are aggressively looking at ways to cultivate what we have out at the modeling, simulation, and technology space. And we have some, I've already made contacts with the folks who own the funding line in the Pentagon for the assets that are out there, and we are working together on creative and innovative ways to get dollars connected to contracts, and more of that will be forthcoming. And the other piece is that I think we have an opportunity to grow our cyber capabilities here. We are living in a great region that has 5 ABET or ABET accredited schools. So we have this talented workforce, and we already have the collaboration between academia and the private sector and in government. And I think all of that is ripe to grow. And then there's dual use for a lot of these technologies, and we're already seeing that organically. And so, however, we're positioning our office and the committee assignments I have to help grow that. I obviously am also very interested in the safety and security of this country. And so we've been working in the national security space as well as with Homeland Security. A few weeks ago, we had a conversation with the local JCC, and they explained to us some of the telephone terrorism that they had been experiencing. And since then, our office has been working very hard to wrap our arms around all the possible resources that can be brought to bear to help them. And we will be launching a letter later today that is signed by over 150 bipartisan members of Congress encouraging the FBI, the Department of Justice, and Homeland Security to take definitive actions towards preventing this type of terrorism, domestic terrorism, from happening, providing resources to the community centers so that they can protect the community that attends these facilities, and then report to Congress on exactly the breadth of what it is that they are going to do to address the situation. And so that will be issued later today. We're gathering the final signatures right now. It has bipartisan broad support. And those are types of things that, you know, our office is keenly aware of and are really excited to be able to support the community.
That's very encouraging. When you talk about national security, the freight routes through Florida, I think we need to be very cautious mm-hmm. in our road construction, that we are aware of that. I think when you talk about security, we're talking about the maintenance of our rail systems, which brings us back to, it's not SunRail. In my opinion, it's never been about SunRail. In my opinion, we need to have the connectivity on the ground across this country, mm-hmm. rails that work for national defense at home, because we really need to be able to move those things. It's been a long time. Jacques Gansler was, mm-hmm. you know, probably 20 years ago, I know, and he was wonderful, the diminishing industrial base, when you talk about dual use of these facilities that we have. So for me, I came from a military background. I'm very, very sensitive to that, but it translates to a local level when we talk about maintenance for SunRail. I mean, that sounds like it's just about moving people, and it's not. It's about keeping those rails safe enough so that we can have national security at home moving across this country. So for me, anything you can do in the way of helping us keep the rails safe, and that just happens to benefit SunRail too. That's wonderful. When you talk about small business, I don't know where you are with being able to tax internet sales. I don't know what your feeling is about that. I know that the League of Cities very much would like to be able to do that, and that's something that you will have some say in. But I'm delighted to hear the things that make you passionate, because that's very important to all of us. And I thank you for what you're doing. And sometimes the little things we're talking about don't seem nearly as important, but they all tie together. Mm-hmm. And we really appreciate your help, especially I think the transportation systems through Florida and making sure we have good routes from our ports and also north and south here. It's important. We appreciate it. Our things seem kind of small compared to what you're dealing with, but we really do need your help, and your influence will be the biggest thing maybe in the transportation realm that you can do for us, because letters signed by representatives mean a lot, and we appreciate that.
Any other comments you may want to make, questions?
What else? The National Insurance Fund is expiring this year, right? And when
they have to make a decision about the flood insurance. Okay. So I was over in the Senate discussing this with Senator Rubio. I think one of the things that we all are beneficiary of is that our Florida delegation, bicameral, bipartisan, with the best interest of Florida. So that is a relationship and a working relationship
huge.
That is really significant for all of us who are in this state. But that is on our radar and on our agenda. It was the senators and several of the representatives, and I assume that is going to be the first of many conversations where we talk about things such as that flood insurance.
And I heard that something like 20% of the funds go to people who are not at high risk. They're not in the high risk area. So the discussion was, should we expand that criteria to encourage more people to be involved in it? So yeah, that's just a thought. I know that program needs a lot of work.
Yeah, and so the question is, as it will be for many of the things that come up or that need to be addressed this year, is do we have the time to address it, or will it be so with this insurance, are we talking about reform or extension? Because you can't allow it to run out.
Right.
Right.
So
it would be too disruptive to the real estate market. So I think, I've heard a number of reform ideas along the lines of what you suggested. So it will be a matter of whether or not, given the other very aggressive and very full agenda, whether we're looking at reform this year or an extension.
So what can we do to help you?
Well, if you continue to communicate with my office as specific things that you need federal level assistance on or some other assistance on, continue to communicate with us. I hope that this for us is the beginning of a conversation as well. Our office is here to serve this community and all the other communities in Central Florida, and however we can be helpful, we want to be. As things come up that you have concerns or issues with, just pick up the phone and call us.
Thank you for taking the time. It's nice to meet you.
Yeah, I have kind of a fun question for you. What's your biggest surprise? You've gone up there as a freshman congresswoman, and we all hear about Washington, right? But you're right in the middle of it now.
Everyone always asks me that, and I think one of the things that is a surprise is how rowdy the House floor can be. you watch it on C-SPAN and you don't really...
You ought to come to a Winter Park City Commission meeting.
I have experienced that, and so... I think the other thing that I do want to put a fine point on is that no matter how... maybe bitter it looks or is being portrayed, there are people in Washington who really want to work together to advance the common cause and move this country forward. And I take a lot of faith and hope in that, and I sit on a couple of these groups that are probably some of the favorite things that I do when I'm in Washington. One is called the Bipartisan Working Group, and it's a by-invite only, about 24 members, and we meet every morning after fly-in, and we come with an agenda of a handful of bills that any one of us might have percolating, and we look for somebody on the other side of the aisle to partner up with and try to move that forward, make it better, and advance it. Because the only way things move these days is you have bipartisan, in a bipartisan way. The other thing we do is we share intel. So that's always fun. What are you guys really thinking about this? And they're like, oh, well, we don't know. Or what you see is what you get, actually here's the plan. So that's a wonderful and very candid and very open forum,
that's
by which I don't even want to say that we're bipartisan. It almost feels nonpartisan when you're sitting there next to somebody who will say, oh, the Democrats are doing this or the Republicans are doing that, and you come to find out they're talking about their own party in third person. That's good.
That's very good.
And there's another group called the Problem Solvers Caucus, and they're also a bipartisan group. It's more broad and more open of a group, and they have an agenda of things that, you know, their interest in moving forward, and they're fairly centrist, moderate positions that you can get bipartisan agreement on, but that are so critical for the future of our country. And so that has surprised me a bit, that there's so much of this going on.
Oh, that is so encouraging.
And it's encouraging.
That's very encouraging, and I would note that it's great to know that there are 400 and some passionate people who spend their time governing when all we typically hear is messages from people trying to sell advertising. So I appreciate that.
But there was an article recently in the Orlando Business Journal about the Water Committee that the Florida delegation has put together.
Yeah. That was on our list. So we talked about floods. We talked about the environment and water.
Sure.
I was so pleased to say that it was, I think it was last week, on two separate days, I had Republican colleagues from the delegation approach me about supporting a water issue for the state. So one was the Apalachicola, and then the other had to do with the Everglades, I think. And so there's a lot of great bipartisan delegation-wide effort and emphasis on ensuring that we preserve the our waterways, because we all recognize that it's an integral part of the way of life here in Florida.
So Georgia wasn't a part of that.
Well, yeah, no, this is...
just checking.
Yeah, but I think we're going to band... I think there's some collaboration that's going to happen with maybe another state... not necessarily Georgia, as it relates to water.
Because ultimately, I think water is going to be the big balancer. I mean, that's going to slow down our economy, ultimately, if we don't take this seriously.
Yeah. Well, I mean, our economy is dependent on our access and ability to use these waterways. Also, our tourism, our, the fishing community, there's just so much on the line when it comes to that.
Making sure that we have enough water to clean water.
And that
the Florida aquifer is, it's in trouble. And it needs attention. Yeah. It needs help. So anything you can do in that regard. And I know there's always the flip side, the unintended consequence of those decisions. But I know you'll weigh them fairly. And I think we need to look ahead, because ultimately it will be the economic stone in the road.
Yeah,
I was in California when we couldn't flush our toilets. We all had gravel in the front yard, and that's not fun either. That slows down business faster than anything else.
Yeah. And you've asked me a couple of times to consider the interests of the folks here in what I do up in Washington. And I will tell you that when I'm guided by my constituents, my conscience, and my country. And that is the way that I kind of frame up the decisions before us. And so water, obviously, this is a constituent country conscience.
Sure.
It's all of the above.
Sure. Thank you.
So we are focused on it. But as there are other things like that, please let us hear from you.
Okay. We'll do that.
We have to get going.
Thanks for taking the time, Stephanie.
Thank you. I really appreciate meeting you.
Thank you so much.